This is Lake Effect from Milwaukee Public Radio. I'm Mitch Teich. It's great to have you listening today. On May 1st, a new era began at the Milwaukee Public Museum when Whitefish Bay native Dennis Coist returned home to become president and CEO of the institution. Coist started in the field right here, earning his bachelor's degree in museum design at UW-Milwaukee. He went on to NYU, where he got a master's in museum studies. He's held a variety of positions at art museums around the country, but this appointment is his first at a natural and cultural history museum. Coist explains to Lake Effect's Bonnie North how his experiences leading contemporary art museums informed this new challenge.
I always wanted to be in the natural history museum world, so I'm excited to be here. But I think the art world itself is a little bit more experimental and willing to take some risks as institutions, particularly the contemporary art side of it, which I was in. And so I think you'll see the public museum think a little more deeply and broadly about what it means to be a museum in this community and how to interface with the community. And there's some real, I think, opportunity in how art museums think about what community means and how to connect people to what they do, which is pretty abstract. And so I think the public museum needs to think about that as well.
Well, give me some examples of what kind of thinking contemporary art museums are doing that maybe natural history museums are not yet.
Well, I couldn't think of two interesting examples. So one might be, how could a natural history museum actually engage with, just to use an obvious example, an artist? There are all kinds of interesting artists out there who are working with our own history, with objects, with sort of scientific specimens, with interests in green issues and global warming. Could you invite some of those artists in to interface with your galleries, with your public, with your collections, and sort of break out of the role that the Natural History Museum is only about dioramas and programs, that you're also about creative interpretation of ideas and transmitting ideas through different cultural mediums. So that might be one example. Another might be, you know, in a more practical sense, the art museum I was last with in Boston, we launched an embedded preschool, which was the first fully embedded preschool at a contemporary art museum in the United States, and got a lot of recognition and interest. But we did it because we wanted to think about how young families connect to institutions over their lives. And so those are kids we're going to track at that museum over 10 years, partner up with Harvard's Project Zero. So could the public museum be thinking more deeply about how we connect to families, how we connect audiences, and how we graduate people from their childhood connection and their family connection to an adult connection to how a senior might connect to that museum? I think there's a lot of nuance to how people engage with institutions that the public museum can sort of advance and think about.
Why do you think natural history museums have been slower to the gate in thinking that way? Why do you think art museums have taken the lead on that?
Well, natural history museums have the great advantage of actually being fact-based, right? So art museums take a lot of risks and are interested in that sort of edginess because that's to some degree what contemporary art is about. It's about risk-taking and advancement, sometimes in the absence of facts. You know, the beauty of natural history and natural science and, you know, a museum like NPM is it's based in reality. It's based in factual information. It's based in its collections and scientific data. So there's less room for, you know, sort of fallacies and errors, and we don't want to promote that. But we do want to promote creative use, perhaps, of the collections and the ideas and the facts that stories that collections can tell you. So I think you'll see some of that coming up.
Have the way people used natural history museums in particular changed in the last 20 years, or have they not changed enough?
I think it's both a question of have the audiences changed, which they have. And then have what museums need to do, has that really changed? And I think both those things are true. For our audiences, I think younger audiences in particular now are interested in the stories that museums can tell them, the ways the museums can connect them to the past of who they are, where they are, what the world is about, to the present of their experience and to the future of where they see their own world and their own interests going. So in that sense, I think on a certain level, younger audiences have different expectations of museums. You know, museums like NPM have this incredible history. They came out of a history of collecting the world and bringing it home for everyone to be exposed to, you know, and essentially collecting and cataloging the world for everyone to be exposed to. That mandate is something that, while it still has relevancy and still has generated value for the museum, we have 4.5 million objects, there's great value in that collection. We don't need to go out and collect and catalog the world in the same way. People have access to things that didn't exist when NPM started, like telephones, automobiles, you know, the internet. And so the question of what the museum's role is now and what it needs to be 10, 50, 100 years from now is very different kinds of thinking than the genesis of museums like NPM.
What do you inherit at the public museum, both in the positive side of the ledger and in the negative side? And then how do you take that forward?
Oh, that's a great question. You know, what I think we have as a resource at MPM that we can take forward, first of all, is a great community affinity and support of that institution. I've been going around telling folks already in just my first few weeks running some numbers, that museum is the sixth most utilized natural history museum in the United States per capita. So when you take our attendance and divide it by the population, we exceed a lot of really well-known museums and how many people come and utilize that institution every single year. And that really tells you something about what it means to this community. So I think that's of great import. I think there's a great sense of continuity and history at MPM. It's a museum that both includes natural history and natural science, but also our local history, cultural history, objects, the story of the city. That's a quite unusual reference point for a museum like MPM. Not all natural history museums collected that kind of material. So I think that's a really interesting piece to think about and take forward. On sort of the challenge side, I would put, you know, and maybe it falls onto both the challenge and the opportunity side, the exhibits. So we have this building full of incredible dioramas. I don't know if all Milwaukeeans appreciate just how special those dioramas are. There's nothing like them in the United States to that quality level and that level of detail. The diorama was invented in Milwaukee at the Milwaukee Public Museum. The first one was built there. It's still on display. And those dioramas are an incredible historic resource. They're almost historic objects in their own right at this point, both in the positive sense that they're really valuable, in the negative sense perhaps that we have not changed them enough and there hasn't been the resources to change them recently or frequently. But the question of how do you navigate that going forward, I think, will be a really interesting one for the museum.
You also inherit maybe a little bit of public not animosity, but certainly concern about finances. You know, there were all kinds of things that happened before your tenure. Do you think that the museum is in a good position to put that behind it and to tell the public, hey, everything's okay?
It is in a position to put those issues behind it. I think it's in a position to turn a corner and move forward. The museum is now debt-free, or very nearly so. It will be debt-free very shortly. It is in a better financial state than it has been in the last 10 years, and that's thanks in great part to the previous president, Jay Williams, and his predecessor, Dan Finley, for focusing on those core issues. That's not to say that everything is okay, meaning all museums need community support. They need donors, they need funders, they need business support. So the museum, like all museums in this nation, has a real challenge in front of it to raise the resources it needs to transform itself. But we're in a position now, thanks to all that past support, to be ready to transform ourselves and to think about what it means to be a museum again, not just in the sense of staying alive and being sustainable, but in the sense of being visionary and looking ahead to what this city needs and what we could mean to this city. And that's a great place for the museum to be.
So in the short term, what are the first steps that you do to help realize that vision?
Part of it is really thinking about it and communicating out to the community that we're open to partnership and ideas and collaborations. And that's something that we very much are engaged with right now and sort of talking to our communities and what we might do. I think it's about going into a process of thinking big and thinking long term for the museum. And to do that, we need to hear from everyone that is a stakeholder at that museum. So people often talk about strategic plans in the context of museums, which sound very dull and very businessy. But strategic plans, when they're done really well, it's a way to solicit the input from the entire community. Everyone of, you know, whether it's geographic diversity, racial diversity, socioeconomic diversity, our employees, our volunteers, our donors, the foundations, the business leaders in this community, we need to get their input on what they need from that museum and what the community sees in it and what its opportunities are. And we need to sort of map that to what we can do uniquely well. You know, we have these resources. We have a collection. We have, you know, exhibits. We have expertise. So how do those two things overlay? What the community needs and what the museum actually has and can provide, and where could we take the museum that will be meaningful for the long-term future of this city and for the museum?
How long do you think that initial process will take you? I mean, you're brand new here, although you are from here, so it's not like you don't know Milwaukee and you don't know the area.
Well,
but it's
I know
been a
Milwaukee
while.
Of 20 years ago. It's been a while. So I think Milwaukee's come a long way since I was in town, and so I'm learning it afresh, which has been a lot of fun. It will take some time. There's a question of both how do you go through the process of soliciting that input and executing and describing what that plan is. And then how do you communicate that plan out to the community and ensure that everyone agrees that that's where the institution should go? You know, we're truly a public institution. Hence, we need to ensure that our public supports where we want to take that institution. So I envision hopefully we'll undertake strategic planning in the next year and be done with it in the next year and then move on to the phase of communicating that vision and that message out and starting to solicit the support we're going to need and starting to align the institution to do the things that it can do. And that's an exciting opportunity. You know, fundamentally, the museum is going to look very different 10 years from now than it looked 10 years ago. In fact, if we do our job right, it might be almost unrecognizable to what it was 10 years ago. But that difference is what's going to make it exciting, sustainable, meaningful for this community, doing enriching work, leveraging its collections and its knowledge. And that's going to be an exciting change.
Well, while all of that is going on behind the scenes, what's going to be happening for the public face of the museum in the next year? What can the public look forward to seeing?
Well, so we have some exhibits coming up, which are always exciting. There's an exhibit called Aliens and Androids, which is sort of about alien worlds, both off of Earth but also on Earth, things like deep sea vents and places like that. So we're excited about that. And then next year, there's two major events happening that we're very excited about. The first is the museum's opening its first permanent new exhibit in 20-plus years. It's called Crossroads of Civilization, and essentially is tracking the various components of cultural development across Egypt, across the Mediterranean, sort of how civilization came to be. It'll be a really interesting exhibit that will be here for the long haul, and that's a big achievement for the museum to have gotten to the point where it could reinvest in itself in that way. The other thing that's really exciting, and both for me as a Milwaukeean, a little daunting even perhaps, is the fact that it's the 50th anniversary of the streets of Old Milwaukee in 2015. So I know Milwaukee well enough to know I will be run out of town on a rail if I do anything that wrecks that exhibit. That said, that exhibit needs to be brought up to date and it needs to be recontextualized. It needs to be enriched. And so I think you're going to see us use both maybe a new introduction to that exhibit as well as some really creative technology, very subtle technology, but really creative technology to enrich what that exhibit is and make it new again for people. And I think that could be a lot of fun. So I'm really excited about that.
For all those people who grew up seeing it and have now brought their kids and sometimes grandkids.
Yes. Yeah. No, it's three generations. I mean, 50 years is a long time for a museum to have one exhibit. It goes back to that opportunity and challenge. You know, people connect to that exhibit. And so there's this great sense of nostalgia. And, you know, I have people say to me all the time, you know, I love the streets of Old Milwaukee, but I'm so tired of that exhibit. But don't ever change it. It's sort of this love-hate. And so we need to figure out a way to renew it and refresh it, but also respect what it is and what it's been and what it means to this community. Because it's a great exhibit.
Now, I realize you haven't had time to look at all
4.5 million objects. I'm easily 0.01% into that process.
Okay. What you've seen so far, do you have a favorite piece that you didn't even know you had?
There are two things that I think are really, really, really interesting. One of them I didn't know we had, and I'm not sure what to do about or think about it yet. So I'm still forming an opinion, and that is an oddity that we own, which is we own a beautiful Bruegel painting, which is on loan to the Milwaukee Art Museum, in fact, and has been for a long time. And that is not something that you would typically see a museum like MPM own. So the question is both, why do we have it? What's the story behind it? What do we do with it? What does it mean? So I think that's an interesting piece and just sort of one of those tidbits that you say within 4.5 million objects of a museum you think of as a science institution, there's a Bruegel painting. Who knew? Along with 45,000 other paintings, prints, and drawings. Had no idea. On the flip side of that equation, there are, you know, our great scientific collections. And I think one of the things that I find really interesting, it's a very unique and odd collection, and in the best possible sense of the word, but we have probably the nation's most important collection of historic typewriters, because typewriters were developed in Milwaukee, believe it or not. The first ones were invented here. The first manufacturers were here. And you have this collection that shows not just sort of the mechanics of, you know, what sounds like very dull historic objects, but this was a design problem. It was an engineering problem. How do you make something that humans can use to create words on a piece of paper? It's not a collection that is necessarily easy to tell a super compelling story about. It's something that's completely remote to a 10-year-old now. You know, I mean, they probably haven't even seen a typewriter. So how do you tell that story? I think that's going to be a really interesting collection going forward. And then I'd add one more thing just to make sure that I mix it up with our natural science collections, because we have amazing science and natural history collections as well. You know, we have these incredible fossil collections where we have pieces of rock, including including one that's probably 10 by 10 feet that's currently stored in our basement that we're trying to figure out how to get on display, that shows the footprints of dinosaurs running across a sandbar. And, you know, you can see these footprints, and it just makes it so apparent that these were living, breathing creatures. And, you know, to me, it's just a miracle that that exists here in Milwaukee, and that we have it, and that you can come and see it. And I think that's kind of the magic of a museum like MPM.
Well, Dennis, welcome back to Milwaukee. It is a pleasure to have you back here and also in the studio talking with us today. Thanks for your time.
Thank you so much.
Dennis Coyce took over as president and CEO of the Milwaukee Public Museum in May. He came to Milwaukee most recently from a position at a museum in Boston. He spoke with Bonnie North. A new novel from a Milwaukee area writer takes young readers to Norway during the German occupation of World War II. We'll hear about it in just a moment on Lake Effect from WUWM.